And with that gavel, I will convene the meeting of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is the 6th of February, which I believe brings us to roughly the midpoint of the short legislative session. We are going to begin today's business with an information meeting. I don't need to gavel in an information meeting, do I?
No, you're fine.
I don't think so, but then we'll have several work sessions and I'll just be smacking the gavel all over the place. So let's begin that informational meeting, which is titled A Subcommittee Orientation. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. I just wanted to take just a minute or two to talk a little bit about what we're expecting, which items we're expecting to come forward before this subcommittee during this short session. We are expecting to schedule 6 meetings, 2 of them for the next 3 weeks, including this week. And in all cases, we do need to have a quorum present. The co-chair needs to have a quorum present to convene the meeting. And I believe in all of these meetings, we are scheduling some votes, work sessions. So we, of course, need the quorum present at the time to take those actions. The types of actions that will be coming before you are several categories. There are federal grant applications. These need to be approved by Ways and Means Committee before an agency can submit a federal grant. You have a couple of those today. There are fee ratification bills to authorize fees that agencies have already established since the 2017 session, but cannot continue without your authorization. There will also be reports that you've been that are being assigned to you to receive and to evaluate, and finally budget adjustment requests. If there aren't any questions, or if there are questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Well, let's just be very clear that that the short session is rather intense for most of the members in terms of scheduling and conflicts and commitments. So, if anybody is going to have a conflict, if they could let legislative staff know so that we can either be prepared to move forward without you or wait for you or bring in somebody to replace you with. But yes, Senator, I know you have to leave in a few minutes, don't you?
About 20 minutes. If there's any of these items that you would need my vote for, maybe you could move them up to the beginning. Or
anybody anticipating any questions on the items on the agenda? Not yet. All right, well then let's go ahead and open a series of work sessions, and I'm going to open all of the work sessions, and I'm going to begin today with the Department of Veterans Affairs, where we have 2 items. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. The next 2 items on your agenda are requests from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to apply for state veterans home construction grants from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The first item is a request to submit a grant application in the amount of $3.9 million for upgrades to the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles. The department is also requesting establishment of $3.9 million of federal funds and $2.1 million of other funds, capital construction expenditure limitation to accommodate award of the grant and required state match. The department is here to present the grant request, and I believe their presentation will cover both this one and the second one on the agenda, but we will officially take action on that second item after we've taken action on the first request.
All right, well, we'd be very happy to hear from the department.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bruce Shriver. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And as Amanda has so well given you an overview of what we're here for, I'll just kind of dive right into these slides. So again, in summary, we are looking to receive approval for 2 grants, one for the Dalles and one for the Lebanon home. To apply for a grant from the Department of Veterans Affairs, United States Department of Veterans Affairs. We are also requesting capital construction authority for that too, so we can be higher up in the priority level. If successful, and looking
Mr. Chair,
Senator.
I just want some clarity. When you say higher up on the priority level, I think what you're saying is if you bring greater match, you move up in federal consideration? Or am I putting words in your mouth?
No, that's correct. The USDBA establishes a priority level. And again, based on all the information that's been submitted, and one of the criteria is matching funds available, then that elevates you up this priority level.
Well, I think, colleagues, that's a material fact, because we want to try to make our application as attractive as possible, and more match means better shot at being awarded, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay. And on a combined basis, if we're successful, if you approve us proceeding with this grant and we're successful, on a combined basis, about $6.3 million of federal funds would be received for that, covering about two-thirds of the total project costs. And the other third would be covered by the Department of Veterans Affairs cash reserves and donations.
And I'm going to interrupt you for a moment. Senator, do you have a follow-up question?
I do. And instead of percentages, how much money is that? Because where it says no general fund or lottery fund monies would be used, I understand not wanting to break faith with what we discussed about veterans and lottery monies, but if you're going to make this attractive, how much, take it out of percentages and talk about real money. Where'd the match come from?
Well, federal funds would cover 65% of the costs, or about $6.3 million.
Okay.
The matching funds will come from the department's cash reserves and certain donations that we've received.
Okay, follow. Have you stretched that as high as you can without annoying constituencies? Is the 35%, is that as high as you can go, or are there remaining reserve funds that could make our application more attractive?
That's as the federal grant requirement requires a 35% match. So that's the highest we can go. We can't, even if we put more into it, it would not raise us further up the priority.
That was my question, that if you had a 50% match, would our application go right to the top of the list?
Mr. Co-Chair, no.
Okay. So 35 is the top, and you've got 35 in hand.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good.
Okay. And again, a key factor is we're not asking for any general fund, lottery fund, or no additional FTE. Just very briefly, because I know your time is valuable here, for the DALS request, a little bit of background on the DALS, just so everybody's aware. The DALS Veterans Home opened over 20 years ago. It opened in 1997. It provides care. It's licensed for care up to 151 residents. And again, this is a skilled nursing facility. It also provides memory and Alzheimer care and some rehabilitative care up there. Who's eligible? It's veterans, spouses, and certain Gold Star parents. And then about 15 years after it opened, a community center was built up there too. It was a major addition and greatly enhanced the recreational opportunities for the veterans and their families there. 2013, we moved to electronic health records, streamlined that process. And then we also have an interior refresh going on up there because it's been open since 97. The resident rooms needed to be upgraded. The kitchen needed to be redone. We've added an activity room for the memory care individuals because that has to be in a secure area. And then finally, we're also looking at, we're in the process of establishing a educational center up there, educational building, so we can train staff. Acquiring staff in rural locations, aides can kind of be a challenging endeavor at times. So we've moved to have training be able to occur right on site.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
Why? I mean, why not share with the community college? Why not share in an already built building? Why do you need to build a building to do training? It's the training that matters, not the edifice that the training occurs in.
Right. Mr. Chairman, we had partnered with a community college up there. But they offer classes only in various designated time periods. And typically, by having this educational building and being able to conduct classes on site, we can have them more frequently.
Follow. That argument falls absolutely cold with me. Part of, I mean, you need to connect with the community, and there's got to be more space. Can't you negotiate with the college and have the building open different times, or are they doing the training? I mean, it just seems to me they didn't offer a schedule that worked for us, so we're going to build a new building. I don't understand that.
It's been our experience that, and again, we have cooperated with the community college up there. It's just the frequency of training. We can't offer classes or get staff as frequently as...
You said you know. No, I don't know. And I'm not going to be able to get past this. And he's going to leave, and you need a yes vote. And you got to help me understand why this matters. I mean, why are we building a new building? Has this not been negotiated hard? Has a case not been made someplace else? There's got to be space that keeps us from building a building.
I may have confused things here. We have a manufactured home. It's already on site, and it's installed. It was approved last session.
Okay, well, that's a material fact that didn't enter into today.
So, sorry for any confusion there.
So, are you building a building for training or not? Are you adding on to the mobile, to the manufactured building, or is it already there?
Mr. Chairman, it's already there. It's already on site. It will open probably before the end of the month for training.
What am I missing here? Help me, Amanda.
Madam Co-Chair, in 2015, the department applied for a state veterans home grant for interior, and I believe that was part of the training center was part of that grant request.
Mr. Chairman, it was included in the 2017 Article 11 Q bond proceeds are to be used for this, along with upgrading the wireless infrastructure at the site.
So it was a project that was approved in 2017, and the current grant request doesn't affect that.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry for any confusion. So the current grant request is what's shown here. Because the facility is over 20 years old, the wear and tear on the roof and the siding is such that we want to get that replaced. There have been some leaks in the roof, so we want to get that repaired. Also, we're looking to add some airlocks near the exterior doors. Presently, if certain doors open, you can get a big gust of wind that comes shooting through there. Also looking to upgrade some exterior garden areas, replace an industrial water heater, and some of the interior windowsills in the resident rooms are pretty worn. So that's what the DALS request would be for. The cost relating to that grant request and the project would be in total about $6 million, of which, again, the federal funds would cover 65% or $3.9 million of that. And the other cash reserves for the department would cover the $2.1 million in donations. So that's what the DALS grant would cover, grant request. Switching over.
Why don't we hold off for a moment, and we'll take these proposals one at a time, which I think is the way that they're going to end up in front of full Ways and Means. Do you have a recommendation regarding this grant? We don't have anybody here from the financial office to make a recommendation for us.
Sure, we can make a recommendation. Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, I'm Tom McDonald with the Chief Financial Office. We recommend to approve the request.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the request and establishment of federal funds and other funds capital construction expenditure limitation in a capital construction bill with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the expenditure limitation until the agency is notified that its application for the grant has been successful.
Madam Co-Chair, what you thinking?
I would move the LFO recommendation.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, you've heard the recommendation. You've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none? Oh, I'm sorry. I rushed you a little bit there, Senator.
I'm after the gavel. I will be happy to carry it.
Ah, okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. Then let's move on to Lebanon, please.
Okay, so the Lebanon home is our newest state veterans home. It opened up in 2014. It's a small house model. Have these little homes that have space for about 14 vets or 14 residents in each home. It's licensed to care for up to 154 residents. Again, it's a skilled care facility, memory care facility, and some rehabilitative care. It's the same eligibility that we have up in the Dalles, you know, veterans, spouses, and Gold Star parents. In 2016, an opportunity arose that we were able to acquire some additional land contiguous to the existing site for future expansion in the parking lot. And in the last biennium, approval was given for us to develop the parking lot. Parking is really tight down there, and there's sometimes people, when they visit, they have to walk quite a distance to get to the facility. So that's current projects. Now, going over to what the grant request
May
is.
May I stop and ask a question? Having visited that home, it is immaculate. It's absolutely beautiful. But on my inaugural visit, the parking lot construction struck me as very odd. The parking lot, even without the expansion, is still a long ways from the front of the building. Hopefully we'll have the chance to build more of these homes sometime in the future, but is that something that you flagged for consideration? The people visiting here are frequently elderly and or disabled.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, yes, that would be something that would be taken into consideration in any future homes. You know, we always would try to look at what's worked well at the existing homes, you know, what we might want to change, you know, given feedback that we've received. So
excuse me, a question, sorry. Representative?
Oh, it seemed like a good time to ask. So I'm just checking, reading this over quickly, and it states that the facility was at capacity within 2 years of its original construction, and now we're adding memory care, activity rooms, and a couple of other little offices and so forth. Was there any thought about adding more capacity, and how does that fit in?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is a possibility. Given that we acquired some additional land, that could be something taken into account for a future period. Right now, there's nothing on the drawing board to do so. But that doesn't preclude it from being considered at a future date. Yeah.
Right. Follow up?
I can't just jump in here now and question their priorities. It just struck me as odd, so.
All right, thank you. Please continue.
Okay. So the grant request that we're looking for, the Lebanon facility, would be, again, adding a memory care activity room. Again, this would serve as a secured area for recreational activities for our memory care families and residents. The building of a multipurpose room building for medical office staff. So visit providers who come, they can see the residents on site rather than having to transport the resident to the provider's office. Also serve for training rooms. Also looking to add a storage building. We always seem, our experience has been that always could stand a little bit more storage, you know, resident possessions and equipment such from the building. And then the looking to upgrade the heating and cooling system. We've had some issues with that heating and cooling system down in Lebanon. So we're asking for money to further improve that. So that encompasses the Lebanon grant request.
And I'm sorry if I missed something. Were some dollars attached to this request?
I got one more slide, sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for that cue. And here are the costs. We estimated the cost to be about $3.7 million, of which the VA grant, if we're successful in acquiring that, would cover about $2.4 million of that grant, and the remaining $1.3 million would be covered by the department.
Again, I'll ask the financial officer, is there a recommendation regarding this proposal?
Tom McDonald, Chief Financial Office. We recommend the committee approve the request.
Spile.
All right. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the request and establishment of federal funds and other funds capital construction expenditure limitation in a capital construction bill with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the expenditure limitation until the agency is notified that its application for the grant has been successful.
Mr. Chair? I would move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you for that motion. Let me begin the discussion with asking a question. I'm looking at this cost breakout, and I'm seeing roughly a third of the money here is being used for planning, leaving two-thirds over for actually constructing what we planned. Is that a typical breakout in your experience?
Yes. There's certain percentages that the federal VA allows for, like, architectural costs and engineering costs. So... yeah, we're basically following the format that the USDVA lays out for us.
Right. Colleagues, further questions or discussion? Seeing none, you have heard the motion. Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And a carrier to full. Senator Monroe, before you leave, would you like to?
I would be happy to carry this to full.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are in multiple work sessions, so I'm going to conclude the conversation from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we are going to move to the Department of Consumer and Business Services to discuss fee ratification.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, Mr. Stainer.
Hi. Happy session to everyone. Today, the Department of Consumer and Business Services is bringing forth a request to ratify fees that were established during the interim. Those are results of the passage of House Bill 2356 related to debt buyers, Senate Bill 98 related to mortgage loan servicers, and one other one, House Bill 2388 is related to pharmacy benefit managers, and that didn't establish a program, but it actually just expanded the agency's regulatory role.
Very good. Well, welcome, Director. I thought you'd get up out of habit when we started discussing the veterans issues.
I was hoping you would.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the Acting Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And first, want to thank all of you for your bipartisan and bicameral leadership for our veterans and their families. It has been an incredible run and certainly bittersweet for me to be leaving our direct work with veterans, but also hugely excited to join the team at DCBS. And what first attracted me to the new role with DCBS is that broad and powerful mission to protect and serve Oregon consumers and workers while ensuring we have a strong and thriving statewide economy and strong business climate across the state. I've also been using the 6 degrees of DCBS analogy, like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, the parlor game. How quickly can you link him to another film or actor? There isn't a program or policy that we don't touch in some capacity across our divisions and teams, from healthcare to the built environment to that business and financial regulation to the overarching worker safety mission, as well as that overarching consumer protection. And ultimately, I was hugely attracted also by the team almost 930 employees of the department, an incredible staff with a great professional reputation that really lives by the core values of respect, integrity, service, and excellence. And as a quick leadership update, wanted to let you all know that Gene Strait, who had been the acting director and was the deputy director under Pat Allen, is stepping down. And I cannot thank Gene and my predecessor, Pat, for their incredible leadership over these past 6 years. And with that opening at deputy director for the department.
Well, deputy director, I just need to back you up a second. I just don't want you to leave the record with the statement that you cannot thank them. I think you can't thank them enough.
I cannot thank them enough. Hopefully I said that. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And with that opening at deputy director, I wanted to let you all know that we've appointed Nancy Boyson from within the team at DCBS, a great state leader with over 30 years experience, both in Department of Justice, Department of Revenue, and across the many divisions of DCBS. I can't thank Pat Allen for stealing the red hot of Laura Callie Robeson, the previous insurance commissioner and administrator of the Division of Financial Regulation, was probably the youngest insurance commissioner in the nation, if not ever, at approximately 31 years old when she was first appointed. She is moving over with Pat Allen to be the new chief financial officer for the Oregon Health Authority. But pleased to be announcing that we have our new administrator of Division of Financial Reg and the insurance commissioner, Andrew Stolfi. He comes from the smoke-filled cigar rooms of Chicago politics, but that has been mitigated by the tenure of his role as chief operating officer and chief counsel for the Insurance International Association of Insurance Supervisors, which is a tough one to say. So we are lucky to be recruiting him and his family back to Oregon. He had his first day on February 1st, and we look forward to connecting him to all of you as policymakers and our diverse stakeholders. One last quick update, if you'll indulge me. We have an incredible team at DCBS, but one early opportunity that I have seen is to better connect our work, whether it's to sister agencies on consumer protection or business advocacy, or to the broader public-private partners across the leadership of Oregon. So pleased to announce that we'll be having Mary Yeager join our team in a Director of External Affairs position to augment our communications effort and legislative team. But Mary comes originally or has previously served as the director of the CASA program up in the metro community as an advocate for kids going through the foster system, had been director of the long-term care office and the ombudsman office, and most recently serving as the director of aging veteran services at ODVA. She brings a wealth of program and public policy experience and is a whirling dervish of partnership and laser focused on mission and advocacy. So we're fortunate to have her joining our team. With that, I'll dive into the specific, unless there's questions. With that, I'll dive into the specific request of the fee ratifications for your consideration today. All three of these for your consideration grew out of bills from the broad consensus bills from the 2017 legislative session regarding oversight and regulation of debt buyers in House Bill 2356, mortgage loan servicers in Senate Bill 98, and pharmacy benefit managers in House Bill 2388. And I would just highlight all three of these. We made sure that in advance of any initial fee setting and rule basis at the agency level and before coming to ratification with all of you today, always convening broad and balanced advisory committees, both with consumer advocates and business advocates and those that are impacted, to make sure that we were hitting the mark with that dual mission of consumer protection and making sure we're mitigating the friction that we add through regulation to our business partners and the economy. So on the first one, debt buyers, House Bill 2356, we have had previous regulation of third-party debt collection. This was largely under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, UTPA, that is enforced by our partner and sister agency, the Department of Justice, and along with a business registration of those third-party debt collectors through DCBS. But within the debt collection industry is debt buyers who purchase portfolios of charged-off debt, and because they actually own the debt at the time that they are looking to collect it, did not fall under the existing authorities. So this bill established a statutory definition of debt buyer and created the regulatory framework to match that, to create that regulatory structure at DCBS. During the 2017 session, while there was broad support for this measure, both as a consumer, a lot of complaints from consumers on some of this debt collection and can be many years in the making and come many years after the debt had been incurred with a lot of aggressive tactics. But we also, while we wanted to address those consumer complaints, we heard loud and clear that we also wanted to impact the impact on small businesses who are debt buyers. And I believe it was Senator Hansel who had recommend that we consider in that fee setting process a tiered approach for smaller or larger businesses. Unfortunately, when we brought that to the advisory committee, we also realized through the national licensing programs that we use that we would not be able to use a tiered model on these debt buyers. But given that it's a small population, we think about 75 entities, we worked collaboratively with that advisory committee to set a much lower rate than we thought. While initially thinking it would be a one full-time position, we have enough at this lower rate of $450 per debt buyer on the application fee and renewal fee. We expect it will generate enough revenue to cover a half-time position going forward to implement House Bill 2356. Had a good consensus out of that advisory committee that that was the right ability, the right rate setting or the fee, and then also the model of the half-time position. Granted, sometimes we do have trouble recruiting for half-time positions, but rather than looking to necessarily come back on this debt buyer fee, looking at how do we augment across other licensing and exam programs and share a full-time position longer term if needed. Any questions on the debt buyer or House Bill 2356?
Any questions? Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, are you going to take these ratifications in block, or is that?
Mr. Snyder, what's your suggestion here?
Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, this request is in block.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Right. Then let's continue. Thank you.
Our next one is the Mortgage Loan Servicer, Senate Bill 98. And we have had similar regulatory structure and framework over mortgage loan originators, whether the mortgage brokers or lenders. This is for the mortgage loan servicers that handle that critical administrative function after the loan has closed. So these are the folks collecting payments, managing liens, escrow accounts, working with the borrowers to modify delinquent loans, and overseeing foreclosures. So prior to the enactment of Senate Bill 98, no state agency had any authority to regulate the safety and soundness of these non-depository mortgage servicers to make sure they were both financially solvent and comply with consumer protection laws. So Senate Bill 98 created that regulatory program. And again, with a diverse stakeholder group, we proposed fees that matched the already established fee structure on the other lender programs and existing mortgage brokers. And that is a mortgage servicer application fee of $960, an annual renewal fee of $480, a mortgage servicer branch application fee of $330, and an annual renewal for the branch of $165.
Senator.
Mr. Interim Director, you may have mentioned this and I just didn't hear it. Did you have any kind of input from any of the affected payees or payors, rather? You said you matched fees that were similarly structured, but was there any input from the folks that are going to be paying these fees?
So Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, the range of stakeholders that were part of the committee as well as interested parties ranged from Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association, smaller or...
I don't have to know them all. Just yes sounds like
so
the answer.
Abroad from AARP and OSPERG and consumer advocates as well as the industry associations across the mortgage industry.
Thank you.
Thank you for that question. We estimate about 150 of these entities doing mortgage servicing with approximately estimated 75 branch offices. This will include an exam component that is charged at a $75 rate. The exams would be conducted within the first 15 months, and then at three-year interval, at the third-year interval after that, and then 2 years after that three-year on an ongoing basis thereafter. We would expect these fees, as is noted in LFO's report, to generate about $320,000 in 2017-19 for this current biennium and drop to $261,000 in the 19-21. All of our fees that are associated across the mortgage and lending industry are pooled. And we believe, so we're, the goal is to have that one FTE as a financial examiner too to help implement this program. We believe those fees, if we've gotten our projections right, that we will likely be collecting more than we need in the long term. But the goal out of that advisory committee was to set the rates or set the fees equally across both brokers, originators, and servicers. And then when, if we ever reach that coverage ratio where we feel like we are collecting too much, collaboratively working with BAM, LFO, and all of you to rejigger those fees across the entirety of both lenders, brokers, and servicers. Any questions on the mortgage loan servicers?
Yes, Senator.
Rejigger, is that a term?
A technical term.
Okay, just want to know.
Co-Chair, Senator Hansel, members of the committee, that might not be the official regulatory.
It may be appropriate, Senator, because it would have to be jiggered first in order to be rejiggered.
That's true.
But let's move on.
The next one is the Pharmacy Benefit Managers, House Bill 2388. Pharmacy Benefit Managers are third-party administrators of prescription drug programs for health insurers or self-insured employers. This is one that previously existed, but in a much smaller capacity with a cap of a $50 fee and simply a registration of pharmacy benefit managers with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Prior to House Bill 2388, we did not have a regulatory framework beyond that registration, whether suspension, denial, or revoking of licensure. So this bill creates that framework and then allows through the process to set the fee. Estimated to be about 50 of these entities that have registered. The fee would be about $1,100 for the pharmacy benefit managers. It would not, so generating about $55,000 a year, not enough to fund a full-time position, but work that we would absorb across the division with our other licensing and examining functions. And happy to take any questions.
Questions? Senator.
The pharmacy fee, is that an increase in them? By how much?
Co-Chair Senator Hansel, it's a significant one, from $50 to $1,100 fee increase. But it was it did not have the regulatory function. It was simply a registration under that previous $50 fee.
Follow-up?
Have you, I mean, what... The pharmacists, have you reached out? Are they okay with it? What's the industry?
That's so, co-chairs, Senator Hansel, similar to the other ones, that broad consensus out of the advisory committee and stakeholder process, a range of mix from pharmacist associations to healthcare providers, insurance carriers, hospital associations, legislative participation. There was a good consensus out of the group that it's the accurate amount to set.
Okay.
Any further questions? I don't see any. Director, does this conclude your presentation?
It does. I thank you for your time. And
all right, is there a recommendation from the financial officer?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. I'm Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office, and our office recommends approving the request.
Mr. Stainer.
Thank you, members of the subcommittee. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation is to include the fees adopted by the Department of Consumer and Business Services for the debt buyer, mortgage loan servicer, and pharmacy benefit manager regulatory programs in a fee ratification bill.
All right.
Senator. Mr. Co-Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you very much for that motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection to the motion?
I'll vote not.
Let the record reflect. Representative Nierman is an objection. The motion carries.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, Mr. Stainer. We're going to move on to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and their fee ratification. Meister, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Before you is a fee ratification for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for two fees that were established due to legislation that was passed during the 2017 regular session. One of those fees is for allows recreational marijuana growers to increase the size of their allowable canopy for medical marijuana patients. That fee is $100 annually. And the other fee is due to Senate Bill 1015, and that allows hemp producers to be brought into recreational retailers for testing and sales. And that fee is $500 annually. The fees were adopted by the department on December 18th and approved by the Department of Administrative Services on January 8th. What we're looking at is a projection of about $26,000 in combined revenue for 17-19 and $52,000 in combined revenue for the 19-21 biennium. So about 60 transactions in 17-19 and 120 in the 19-21 biennium combined.
Gentlemen.
For the record, Bill Schutte, Chief Financial Officer for the Liquor Control Commission. Ms. Deister presented the fees that we were proposing. They were passed in rule last month. The canopy expansion is to allow a current recreational grower to grow, expand their canopy, a privilege of expanding their canopy by 10%, with the caveat that 75% of that production be donated to medical patients. That was part of Senate Bill 1057. And then Senate Bill 1015, the $500 fee is for hemp growers to allow their product to be entered into the OLCC recreational system. The definition of hemp by is marijuana, but the definition of hemp is less than a 0.3% THC. By entering into that, some of it starts to exceed that level, and the hemp producers would have the ability to sell through our recreational stores. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Does that conclude your presentation?
That concludes my presentation.
Well, again, I'd be pleased to hear from the financial office.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. Patrick Heath again with the Chief Financial Office, and our office recommends approving the request.
All right, thank you very much for that recommendation. Michael, if we could stand at ease for just a moment. All right, we're back on the record. We just needed to take a quick break for some administrative details. And Senator Johnson, do you have a motion for us regarding... Oh, excuse me. I have not yet asked for a...
I can't make the motion until I've heard the wisdom of LFO.
Well, let's move right to that item.
The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that the fees established by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission be included in the fee ratification bill.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Colleagues, you've heard the recommendation and the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Before we move on, did we get a carrier for the DCBS fee ratification?
Michael says no.
Well, Senator Johnson, you want to take that one?
Sure.
And I will take the OLCC, and therefore each of us has one presentation at the next meeting.
Okay. Chair, if you don't mind,
please,
being a new member, I would love to carry one of those.
You have to be on the Ways and Means.
I am a new member on Ways and Means.
I would happily defer to Representative Noble.
Why not start it off right?
Okay.
Representative Noble, I do apologize. I haven't been reading the notes on all the transitions all over the place. So welcome to the big table.
No, I'm at the little table.
Well, welcome to the little table in front of the big table. Yeah. All right, very good. So you'll be handling DCBS.
Great.
All right, very good. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close the work sessions, and I'll go ahead and conclude this meeting. Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.